Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. It's good to see you, Nikias. Got the fresh cut coming live from Destination Unknown. Back on the 67th floor. We love to see it.
Wait a minute.
It's that time of the year, folks. Summer season, catch flights, not feelings. I guess the key part is to catch flights first, but we'll talk about that, I'm sure. Special shout out to all you life experts out there. Try not to get packed up while you're out there. Be careful out there. Speaking of packed up, the guys got packed up by Kelsey Plum.
That did not.
Got you a nice little two-piece, put it in the bag, handed it right to you.
Checked luggage. I see. But no, this has been a very wild weekend in which I just spent eight and a half hours at the airport on Sunday, which was not very fun. As far as the Kelsey Love thing, I was not packed up. I was asking a question, wanted to ask about the offense. I started with, obviously, you're having a great offensive season, you know, trying to compliment leading to the question. And she corrected. And she was like, hey, I think I'm having a great season, period. You know, doing the work on the defensive end, too. And I was like, hey, that's fair. And that's kind of what that was.
I got access to the raw audio. She said, yo, dog, put some respect on my name defensively. And that was it. But we can move on. It's fine.
That's fine. Anyway, Zoom calls, delayed and also canceled flights. We are here. We are ready to talk about some basketball on this fresh and fire Monday night. Let's kick it off with the W. Very active weekend. What did you watch this weekend?
Sparks, Aces, Wingstorm, mainly. I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to ask a question to you, sir.
Okay.
Do we owe the Mercury an apology?
I don't know if we owe them an apology. It is nice to see them on a streak right now. Very fun. Actually, while we're on the Mercury front, I was, again, in the middle of all this flight madness. I had plenty of time on my hands. So I was like, hey, let's catch up on the Friday slate of games. Turned on Mercury Dream, and boy, was that a fun game. A lot of pace. I felt like, one, this is a really good, I think this is a good challenge for the Dream to face a team like the Mercury that they pretty much switched everything Atlanta wanted to do. And it very quickly became, can we execute? Can we screen correctly to force any kind of crack? Or if they do flatten us out, can we get downhill? Fun game from Ari McDonald. Fun game from Ryan Howard. Fun game from AD as well. You could already see their presence coming off the bench as a rim pressure merchant, honestly. The Mercury couldn't keep them out of the paint. But man, the Mercury just keep coming. Watching Diamond the Shields fly around has been fun all season long, honestly. Diana Taurasi, to watch the Dream sort through two or three different coverages to try to keep her out of rhythm during that game was fun. I'm sure you will enjoy that note. But there was some switching. There was some drop. There was a higher drop. And it's like, all right, cool. We're just going to send two to the ball. We're going to rotate behind it. We got speed on the back end. But we just don't want Diana Taurasi basically waltzing into pull-up threes. And she just became... It just got to a point, especially after the first quarter or so, it just came to a point where anytime Diana Taurasi touched the ball, like something opened up. They didn't always convert. She didn't always make her shots. If she made the pass, the shots didn't always fall from her teammates. But every time down, it's an off-ball screen for her. They're sending two. Something's opening up. High pick and roll, they're sending two. She strings it out, hits the roller, or skips the ball across, and they're playing out of that. And I'm just like, man, if Diana Taurasi can still do that on offense, and the Mercury are able to home from there. Also, Skylar Diggins-Smith remains a dog on both ends of the floor. But if you could get that from Diana still, that gives them a template to kind of open things up. So I just really enjoyed the pacing of that game, the back and forth affair. It became a high-scoring affair. It didn't look like it was going to be that way after the first quarter. But that was one of the more fun games of the regular season for me.
And it was a little bit of revenge because last time they saw the Dream, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So it was,
that noon tip. Got out the paint.
Dot, dot, dot. It's good to see the Mercury scoring again. I'll ask this question to just allow you to Euro step past any Taurasi talk today because we're in a good place right now.
Okay.
more important for the Mercury going forward, Skylar Diggins-Smith or Tina Charles?
I think it's Tina Charles, which also she got buckets in that one. It's fun. What the inside out dynamic that she has is, I don't want to keep saying fun, but like I'm just giddy thinking back to that game. I watched that earlier today. Like it's, she is a technician on the block and pick and pop for mid-range jumpers. The three-point shot, she shoots it enough to where you have to worry about it. And she also shoots it well enough to where you can't just leave her. And she also has enough ball skill to pump and go. And it's, that's just a very welcome addition. I was curious to see how that signing was going to work heading into the offseason before, again, we're still waiting on Brittany Griner to come home. And it's ridiculous that it's taking this long. Free Brittany. But she has filled in, on the offensive end at the very least, she has filled in pretty admirably so far. And I think they need to continue to do that because I do think against better defensive teams than the Dream are, and they've been solid this year, I do think switching can be more of a weapon against this version of the Mercury. And so you kind of need Tina Charles to be someone that can open things up for you, give a counter to those guards, and just have somebody that can complement their skill set.
I'm just curious because they're both pressure points in different ways. I think when Skylar has it going, it's different. I think Tina Charles just is going to be a pressure point. Well-deserved. And then Trossi can always just flip the script immediately. And if they start to get that blend together with the drives from the Shields, it gets interesting. Let's get to our regularly scheduled and sponsored Aces segment of the week. Brought to you by Nobody. Vegas, hit me up. I got y'all.
True. Pretty true. I was like, the Dunker Spot, sponsored by MGM. Okay. Anyway, the Aces are very good at basketball. I actually don't have a long rant on them this week. There's only so many ways I can say they are ridiculous offensively when they're playing with this sort of tempo. They are a blast to watch in transition. The defensive pressure amps up and can force you into turnovers. And if you're beating their base coverage, they just toss out zone, and that becomes an issue. And even without Jackie Young, still waiting on her to come back, they still have enough activity at the top of the zone to where no pass is really safe. And, you know, we had a watch party for that game, and you said it a few times, like throwing out a zone against, shout out Fred Williams, who's filling in. He's the interim coach right now for the Los Angeles Sparks after Derek Fisher was fired. First game against the Las Vegas Aces. Talk about getting a challenge off rip. And the zone kind of flustered the Sparks. When you're playing three and a half non-shooters on the floor at the same time, you're kind of opening yourself up to these kind of defensive tactics. And it got, after the first quarter and a half, like it got pretty ugly for the Sparks. Like the offense dried up. So Aces remain fantastic. Want them to get healthy. They need their wing room. They need their wing room. Jackie Young and Raquan Williams being out at the same time is not great. Not great.
They're a machine, and these could be some good reps. As you get healthier, you might have some contributions. I thought the mixed defensive coverages were great. Asia Wilson put a nice dent into my MV Plum campaign. And shout out to Hamby. Making some shots. Making the defense pay a little bit. I'm intrigued. That's the thing. Watch out.
He is, I believe she's the X factor for this offense in terms of like their title aspirations. Because I think you know what Kelsey Blum gives you at this point. She's been, you know, to your point, she's been an MVP caliber player this year. The mix of the drives, the pull-ups in particular, the playmaking that's bound off the pull-up shooting, it's ridiculous. Asia Wilson is probably my pick for MVP right now, just what she's doing on both ends of the floor. But you know what kind of pressure she puts on her defense. We have Jackie Young when healthy. Mid-range mercenary can also get downhill, get to the free throw line just about whenever she wants to. Chelsea Gray, solid pull-up shooter. She's your bailout option, which is insane for a guard that's as talented as Chelsea Gray. But she's pretty much, eight on the clock, our action didn't work. Let me dot down this pull-up in your face. And she can do that. The one question mark off, not even question mark, but just the fifth option is De'Erica Hamby. When she's not involved as a screener, and we talked about this when we talked about the Sky game not too long ago. If she's not involved as a screener, defenses are comfortable helping off of her. Like, all right, cool. She's on the weak side. We're going to help rotate over. We're going to help on this initial action. if she beats us with shots, cool. And she knocked down threes against the Sparks. And if she's able to do that, if you get to the point where you can't just ignore her, I don't know how you defend this offense. You can't switch against them and feel good about it. Like, somebody's going to have something. As we talked about with the Sky game, again, you put two to the ball consistently, like, they've shown they can beat that coverage. And drop, you play drop against Kelsey Plum if you want to. Like, sure, give up that 30 points. So it's, just got to keep an eye on De'Erica Hamby. She's been working on the defensive end. She's a monster in transition. But the half-court offense, she has to be able to provide something as a shooter, as a cutter. And if they involve her as a screener, then she's obviously a good finisher off the roll. But that's what I'm eyeing. If she has that, I don't know what you do.
That's how you got to know your teammates. You got to know what spots to get them in at the offense, know where they're comfortable to get a rhythm jumper. Speaking of keeping an eye, are you keeping an eye on the Sky? Because the clouds are moving. There might be a storm on the horizon.
I see. Not you being a wordsmith. That's what I'm talking about.
That's bars. You got to check the standings, you know?
That's fine.
The Sky are third, Storm are fourth. Come on.
I got you. That's some good stuff. That is some good stuff. We did, we attempted to host a watch party for Storm Wings. My internet was just shot because I was stuck at the airport still.
Hey, man, man was eating chicken the whole time, folks.
Eating chicken the whole time. I was not. I will say I did have Bojangles for the first time in literal months. Fantastic. The airport price is not so much, but that's neither here nor there. How are we feeling about the Seattle Storm right now?
Well, they're in the position they want to be. I think we talked about the moves defensively, and I think they're paying off. It's tough to score on the Storm night in, night out. They bring that to the table every single night. The interesting point is going to be, how does this mesh offensively? Because as we saw during the stretch of games, even going when they play Dream, they have a flow, they have a tempo, they have star power, and then things just kind of bog down. And then they stay bogged down for like 4 or 5 minutes. So
you want to dig into why that happens?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. Go ahead. Get it off. Come on.
It just seems like the offense bogs down at the same time that Sue Bird, Breonna Stewart, and Jewel Lloyd are on the bench at the same time. That would be the first thing that I would point to with why the half-court offense gets a little janky towards the end of the first, early second. That's just me throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. You can continue.
This man interrupted my point to do a victory lap about all bench lineups. You got to be kidding me. Anyhow, it's, I guess the feeling I had after watching the Storm Wings, it felt Clippers adjacent in a sense. Like, hey, we got a whole bunch of defense and we got these two that can get buckets, but also we got to figure out some other things to kind of create a flow, which is weird because sometimes, I mean, they have the personnel, they have the talent. Even those half-court possessions that feel a little bogged down, in the fourth quarter, it's different because that's a lot of star power. You know, if it's a swing and now Sue Bird's an inverted pick and roll for Stewie, that's tough. Or it's Sue coming off Jewel Lloyd and Stewie, and it's like, wait a minute, we have to figure this out. Now you throw in Ezzie making shots, and it's like, oh, wow, they can kind of drop the hammer real quick. It's just, can they sustain so those 10-point leads turn into 18-point leads as opposed to, we're up 22 to 12. Oh, snap, it's 22 to 20. Oh, wait, we're down three. Oh, wait, we're back up six. Like, the Storm, it just kind of feels like a tennis match. But that defense in the playoffs should pay off. But that's kind of like a similar feeling I have with the Sky at times, too. It was just these teams having to figure out exactly how they can put their stamp on it. But it's, I mean, what you have, Stu, you have Jewel Lloyd, who are bucket getters. You have Sue Bird, who can create a play out of nothing. You can find enough. And if that defense is going to hold up, they got a shot.
That they do. And just on the defense front, one, you hit on all of that. Just quick note, man. Ezzie McBaur is insane on the defensive end.
Ezzie Nabigor.
You know what? I'll let you have that. I'll let you have that. I sent out the tweet over the weekend. Like, I think, at least right now, her and Asia are the all defensive team centers. Where you place them, I'd probably say Asia's first team, Ezzie's second team right now. Call me out if I'm tripping. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. just that level of mobility and scheme versatility that Ezzy has, like the block shots are, I mean, they pop off the screen for you. And you can just sort, you know, the block's leaders and put her up there if you want to. But just watch what the Storm asks her to do defensively. Watch how high she has to play pick and roll sometimes. Watch the random switches late in the clock and see how she holds up. And then get into her playing the passing lane when they're trying to dunk the ball to a big to set up some elbow action or something. Watch how she plays that. And then get into all the block shots that she has. Like, she is incredibly fun. Still needs a little bit of refinement, but she's flying around now. And she, like, I feel like she's kind of the linchpin of this Storm defense. And for her to be at this stage in year three, the sky's the limit for her. I love watching her play defense. Before we move to the NBA, let's get into some WNBA All-Star voting commentary here. The first result.
I can't wait for this. Let's see. Is the energy going to be the same?
What do you mean? What did I do? Anyway.
We don't know yet.
Oh, man. The early results came out on Friday, I believe. The top 10 vote getters between four guards, the top four guards and top six front court vote getters are your 10 starters. And then the coaches pick the reserves from there. But right now, your top vote getters among guards are Kelsey Plum from the Aces, Jackie Young from the Aces, Sue Bird from the Seattle Storm, and Jewel Lloyd, also from the Seattle Storm. And for your front court, you have Asia Wilson, Breonna Stewart, Candace Parker, Elena Deladon, Sylvia Fowles, who is currently out indefinitely with a knee injury, which stinks to have her swan song season at least put on hold, if not just cut short. So we'll see how that, what that development is moving forward. And Nneka Ogumike. Do we have any gripes or concerns or anything about the top 10 right now?
I personally do not. Nikias, do you have any issues with the first top 10?
Issue is probably too strong. I think if there's one thing for me to quibble about, and I'm sure I'm going to get packed up, it's fine. I don't know if Sue has been a top four guard this year. Top six, top seven. Feels like more of the range for me. And again, like, that's people who have listened to this podcast long enough, you know how I am, how angry I get about like voting and stuff. Award teams, all-star teams, whatever. And so if there's one thing for me to quibble, like, I like Sue as a starter might be a little strong for me. But she's also been good this year. So I don't really have beef. That would just be my one thing. You can go ahead. I'm waiting to be lit up, thrown over the top rope, super kicked, pedigreed.
This man. Sue slander?
How is it slander?
Oh, what, the all-star vote?
What is the slanderous thing I said about Sue Bird? What is the negative thing that I said about Sue Bird and any of that?
Really?
I'm asking the question.
Really? I'm not doing this right now. I'm in a good mood. Continue on.
That's fine.
Sue Bird shouldn't be an all-star starter.
What?
Okay, who you putting in? Who you putting in then? Let me hear it.
Like, I think Ryan's been better.
Because
I would also say Scott, what?
Because why?
Why has she been better? Like, I think she's been leaned on more offensively. I think she's brought more as a scorer. I think she's been a little bit better as a defender. And she's able to defend more positions because of her size.
Got you. How about the playmaking?
The playmaking is very squarely Sue. Like, Sue remains one of the best playmakers in the sport.
Interesting. All right, continue. Who else you said?
I was going to say, like, I would look at what Skylar's doing. But again, like, this, my thing is, I don't know if she's four. She might be six. Like, that's where I'm at with the Sue Bird case. While we're on legends, how do you feel about Diana Taurasi actually being sixth among guards and voting?
I didn't feel great about it. I'm not doing this with you right now, man.
I'm just asking.
You're not about to trigger me. Nope. We're not doing no Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi Slater. You have a blast. Where's the X in this meeting room? How do I hit? Where's the leave? Red button. I'm clicking it.
I will say, as far as other like notable results in the early voting, I'm kind of surprised. One, Jonquel Jones being eighth among front court players is just weird to me. Like, she isn't having the MVP campaign she had last year, but she's also very freaking good. And the Suns have also been very good. So I don't know, where's the voter base with the Sun? Like, get her in there. I don't really get that one. Also, Sabrina Ionescu being ninth among guards right now. Like, voting ends on June the 20th. So I'm curious to see, like, with this recent stretch that she's had with multiple triple doubles and a lot of deep threes and everything and delivery starting to surge a little bit. I would imagine she gets quite a bump over the next week. So I'm going to be tracking that. But seeing her knife was also just kind of weird. Actually, before we transition out of the W altogether, I do have a quick question for you. Am I allowed to ask you a question right now? Are you fed up?
Man, go ahead, ask, man.
I meant to ask you earlier before we transition to the All-Star voting, but among the teams that have 5 wins right now, which would be the 5-8 Sparks, the 5-8 Mercury, and the 5-9 Liberty, who do you trust the most right now?
Who do I trust the most?
Yes. You trust most to turn it around, or just recent play, who are you liking the most right now?
Trust?
Yes.
Probably the Mercury.
Okay.
Just due to the talent involved. Believe? It's the Liberty for me.
Okay.
They are coming. Tough loss to this guy. But boy, what a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can see the pieces starting to feel a little bit better. Everyone's getting a little bit more comfortable. Natasha Howard's been a huge part of this. Sabrina playing at this level, no matter what the defense has been a huge part of this. It's not just scoring triple doubles. Marin!
Yo. I told y'all she's fun.
No, you undersold it. Please go watch her pass the basketball. Please, go watch it. She had one of the more incredible passes I've seen in a very long time in that game. How would I even describe it? Drive, ball fake, behind the back, right in the pocket for Dolson for three?
Yeah.
It was insanity. Please, her playmaking. Nah, Liberty are fun.
She is one of the wildest passers I have ever seen. Period. New sentence. That is not limited to women's basketball. That is not limited to the WNBA. Marin Johannes is one of the best passers I've ever seen. Watch her on the Liberty.
Yeah, man.
Old highlights and also just watch her on the Liberty.
I'm going to the Barclay. Wait, I'm not allowed. Never mind.
All right. Yes, sir. Basketball. Woo. Before we get into the finals game, we do have a minor nugget of NBA news. The Nuggets traded Jamichael Green and a protected 2027 first round pick to the Thunder for the 30th pick of this year's draft and 2 future second rounders. I haven't, at least to this point, we're recording on a Monday night, so maybe something comes out tomorrow. But to this point, I haven't seen anything about Jamichael Green being waived or traded. I will assume that that's going to be the case. I don't think he's going to stick in OKC. This very much feels like the Thunder saying, hey, let's trade out of, we're not going to roster 4 rookies this year. Let's trade for a later first. And the Nuggets are like, hey, here's a later first. And also, here's a vet that you can flip and get something else for. Kind of felt like a win-win for me. Where would you like to see, or where could you see Jamichael Green, assuming he's not long for OKC?
I don't assume he's not long for OKC. You forget. OKC is A, all about the picks, and B, not afraid to go with the veteran protection program, in which we will just let you chill. See if we can get a pick for you. So I don't have any potential fits for him, because I think he's going to be there for a little bit.
Yeah, all right.
What about you? How do you think about it? What do you think about it, sir?
I would say I'd kind of like him in Miami off the top of my head, just to give them, I guess, a fourth big in this case. They can space it some, can defend some. Like, last year was, I guess to call it a down season would be a bit of a understatement. But I do think the best version of him is a guy that can space, that can perform multiple defensive coverages, and can just fill 14, 18 minutes for you off the bench. And I think a good team can use that kind of versatility in their front court coming off the bench. So I look at Miami first, because I know they're going to have to do some roster shuffling, or they're going to want to do at least a little bit of minor roster shuffling on their bench. He seems like their type of vet, especially in light of Marquise Morris just not doing much of anything after the Jokic scenario earlier in the regular season. And he was on a minimum contract anyway, so I don't know if he's back. But I would expect a team like Miami to take the at least look into that. Let's get into game five talk. The Golden State Warriors with a pivotal 104-94 victory over the Boston Celtics. And honestly, it really wasn't 10 the way that that fourth quarter went. The benches cleared late in the fourth to kind of got the score a little bit closer. One heck of a victory from the Golden State Warriors. One, you go up 3-2. So, duh. You have two chances to win one now. But beyond that, for them to overcome a poor shooting night from Steph Curry, I'm not going to say a bad game because I don't think Steph played poorly. He just didn't have the shots falling. This is the first playoff game of his career that he did not make a three-pointer. The first time he went over from deep since 2018 in any game. So very rare occurrence here. But you have Andrew Wiggins filling in. You have Klay Thompson filling in. You get a big boost from Jordan Poole off your bench. You got Gary Payton II knocking down timely shots and getting it done. I guess, where do you start in terms of what Golden State was able to do tonight?
Play basketball well?
Ah, I see. I see.
That's where I start. Would you like me to continue?
Yes, that would be cool.
I find it very funny that this was the game that happened after the post-game chatter was Steph Curry is carrying everyone. And who's going to help Steph Curry? And everyone helps Steph Curry because the Warriors are pretty good at basketball. It's kind of weird how that works.
Kind of funny.
You got the contributions you needed. I mean, to win a game like that, shooting 9-for-40 from three, that's not how you drew it up, but Jordan Poole did what he was supposed to do. 14 points in 14 minutes. Go ahead and cook. Klay hit the shots he needed to. Wiggins was incredible. Defensively, offensively, I think every phase of the game, he was good. Draymond made his impact be known. They got enough from whoever they needed off the bench in whatever limited stints as far as Iguodala, you get your four, which I don't think he should play against Robert Williams, but that's just me. Nemanja, you do your job. Marcus Smart scored one bucket, and Steve was like, all right, enough. That's not going to be the thing, but good job. But no, honestly, I thought the Warriors really set the tone early defensively. I thought their activity was very important. I thought they did a really good job of keeping the ball in front, which set a tone. So we've talked about during the series how important the late help has been for Golden State, and it's been kind of the key to their defense. I thought today they were really just keeping the ball in front. The paint touches weren't really there for Boston early. We even saw more stunts and recovers. So we've seen them kind of evolve in that manner and kind of took that one-on-one dribble penetration off the table for Boston. And I think that when you look at the Warriors' defense, I thought the most important thing early was just how Curry worked in pick and roll. We've seen them kind of give the switch, give the late help or show the double when they need to. They went back to show and recover tonight early. And we saw, you know, when I saw Tatum try and screen and Curry fight over, I was like, oh, this is a little bit different tonight. So I don't know if the Boston was anticipating that. And I think that got them later in the clock and they were searching, and we'll continue to go on about that. But I thought Golden State responded during the course of this game.
I got you. I'm glad you brought up the point about the way that Steph defended in this one. I feel like overall, Golden State really, they walked the line between throwing even more pressure at Boston without giving them automatics, if that makes sense. Like, they had to show and recover, but it never really felt like Golden State was out of control when they went to that show and recover. It never felt like, I guess going back to maybe game two, it never felt like those slips were open. If they did send two to the ball, like, there just wasn't any immediate pocket for Boston to attack. And as you said, like, they got them later in the clock. And with the help that Golden State was showing, Boston couldn't really get comfortable. I was really impressed with what Golden State was able to do. Boston, over the last two games, they just have not been able to generate paint touches and get Golden State in rotation and generate good shots consistently.
I'm going to pause you there.
Okay.
I'm going to pause you there because I feel like Boston went on a full adventure in this game offensively. So I know where you're going to go. And I am going to dribble for about 5 seconds and then hand it off that you can run pick and roll. So here's the thing with what Boston did offensively. Plots have been lost during this series. I think we can both agree on that. Their tempo was not very good to start this game. That didn't help them. The decision-making wasn't very quick, and the pressure wasn't on the Warriors to, as you say, have to react. They were able to anticipate. They were able to dictate a lot more defensively. It was a really fun, like, mini battle for me to watch in the first half as far as Boston trying to get back to the pressure points they knew they had created and Golden State working to keep them away from it. Because that's one thing about Boston. You can talk about their blend, stagnation, all that good stuff. When they find a pressure point, they're going to keep going at it. And they really do a pretty good job of disguising how they're going to do it. So even if, hey, let's say we're going to try and attack Steph Curry and you don't give me the switch, well, now we're just going to bring Steph Curry's man right back into the action and put you right back in that pickle. I thought they started to find that as the first half kind of went along. And mixing in those different actions, I thought, helped them. Forcing Golden State to react and then continue to defend helped them. But we started to see Golden State do a good job of trying to kick Curry out of the matchup early, trying to scram, switch him out, not giving the first switch that Boston was anticipating. So while they're still grinding to keep pressure on you, it's going later in the clock. So those possessions aren't necessarily hitting the same as they did in earlier steps. But I did think Boston had some decent wrinkles. You know, if you think about, let's say, Jason Tatum and the way that they had tried to unlock him off the ball and use that as a way to attack matchups. And now you have the Warriors deciding, hey, we're just not going to give you that switch that way. Well, Tatum cuts back door. Now he gets a post up against the matchup because he forced a switch. Just didn't feel like they did enough of that. Felt like sometimes they found something and they would move from it. But, you know, another good wrinkle was as things were kind of getting away from them, all of a sudden it's Marcus Smart post-ups. Hey, let's settle everything down. Let's get some Marcus Smart post-ups in here. And the Warriors doubled one. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. This is what we're doing.
This is different.
And before I let you go, I thought the third quarter was the blend they needed. I thought they did exactly what they had to do in that third quarter offensively. And I thought the tone was set early. I want to say Marcus Smart, Steph Curry was guarding Marcus Smart. Jason Tatum had it on the wing. Steph Curry goes with like a squeeze and under pick and roll coverage. So folks, if you don't know, that's a super old school coverage where basically your man's screening and you just basically stay with your man. And the guard just has to figure it out.
On the left, that Tatum threw on the left wing?
Yeah. And then Tatum just went the other way on a rescreen and hit a three. And I was like, oh, this is where you're going with this, Boston. And Golden State, what are you doing? And Boston kept hammering with that empty side pick and roll. And they knew, hey, Steph's going to switch on to Jaylen Brown. Fine. We know the help is coming. We're just going to drive for the help and play out of it and skip and get threes that way. And they got Golden State to the point of actually giving the switch against Tatum. And I think they got one post up maybe, and the Warriors ended up doubling. But that double pick and roll action that Boston ran to get Curry involved every time. Like, hey, you have to do something. Show and recover is not ideal. We can get a switch that way. And I felt like they kind of had like a blend going.
And then.
But then, I don't know if they knew it was the personnel involved and not necessarily the action. So I want to say it was like end of third, beginning of the fourth. They tried to do the same thing, except it was like Poole involved. And then Poole just didn't give the switch. And now it's a Tatum ISO against Wiggins. And it's like, wait, part of this is right, but y'all stopped doing the thing. And that's where I was like, y'all found something. Why didn't you not keep the pressure on?
Now continue talking about the Boston Celtics offense.
Okay. Well, one, thank you for reeling me in, because we were talking a little bit before. I'm just like, man, I'm just kind of disappointed in what I saw from Boston. And so thank you for coming back with the good things that they did attempt. And that third quarter was huge for them. And we were talking about some of this during the watch parties, particularly when they went to double drag to as a way to get to the Steph matchup and forcing that switch. There was a play, I want to say early third quarter, they go some of their they go into ramp screen action. Screen to screener, flow into an inverted pick and roll to try to get Steph to the matchup. Golden State tries to kick Steph out of it. And Steph ends up on, I want to say, Derek White. And Tatum's like, all right, well, that's fine. You saw what we want to do. Good job. Derek White, you come here. Now let's get Steph into the action again, and let's see what you do with that. And so I guess as you go through that, and I kind of reevaluate where I wanted to go, like, I think that's kind of the crux of my frustration with Boston. Beyond the basic box score stuff, you're not going to beat Golden State if they turn the ball over 12 fewer times than you do. You're just not going to do it. Even with both teams shooting poorly from three, like you're giving them extra possessions. You can't do it. But beyond that, the fact that in game four in particular, in late in game four in particular, they just couldn't get anything going. That was the real we can't generate good stuff portion for Boston. The fact that Boston was able to find some stuff tonight and get creative with the way that they attack Steph. And in the third quarter, not only did they get creative with the way they were going after Steph, just as you kind of touched on earlier, like the tempo did improve. It didn't feel like the first screen's coming with 13 or 14 on the clock. It doesn't work. Now it's an ISO or an early pull-up. It felt like they were genuinely working towards some stuff. And then the plot was just lost. And they kept turning the ball over. And on the occasion they were able to get downhill and draw fouls, they were missing free throws too. And so I just kind of zoom out. And it's like, this is the most food left on the table. This might be the most food left on the table game of the series for Boston. And I think there was a stretch during the watch party. It was like fourth quarter. Golden State was going on a run. And Boston was trying to counter. And you said something to the effect of like, oh, Golden State needs to win this one. And I came back with, no, Boston needs to steal this one if they can. Because like this is... Steph comes off of arguably his best finals game with the first 0-for from three in his playoff career. And you shook off a terrible start in the first quarter, made a run in the second, really made a run in the third. This is your time to steal it and have a chance to go back to Boston with a chance to win the finals. And it felt like they just completely lost their minds in the second half of the game. Turnovers, early shots. I was going to make the point, but you already hit on it. The good stuff they were doing in the third, they tried to do it in the fourth without even recognizing who they were involving in it. There was so much Jason Tatum versus Andrew Wiggins, Jaylen Brown versus Andrew Wiggins, which one, credit to both of them for defending as well as they have, especially Klay Thompson, someone that I have questioned throughout this playoff run on the defensive end in particular.
Apologize to that man. You got to apologize to that man.
Hands up. That's on me. But Klay has been tremendous when defending Jaylen Brown. And even the times that he's gotten Jason Tatum, he's bothered him as well. And so they deserve their credit, but also for Boston. This is two games in a row where your offense hasn't come close to producing the way that you needed to. And you've had chances still, if you could get out your own way a little bit. It's one thing for Golden State to defend you well because they have the personnel, they have the coaching, they have the experience, they have the IQ to do so. You can't also feed them things. You can't lose your purpose in the half court. And I felt like there was a lot of that in the third, late third, and then the fourth quarter was just
a mess. I thought the start of the fourth, what we're talking about, yeah, you found something with Smart Tatum pick and roll, but the start of the fourth, when you go to that, guess who's involved? Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson. And Jordan Poole is sitting there guarding Grant Williams. it's, I thought at the start of the fourth, both teams should have felt good about where they were at. Warriors not having a good Steph game, but still right there. Took a punch. Boston delivered a blow. Now we just need to finish it off. And that becomes a pressure point battle. And if you're not going to hit your pressure points at this stage of the game, it's tough. There was one key stat for me that stood out. Boston, 31 made field goals, 18 assists. Now, folks, you might be thinking, why is that important, Steve? It's the first sub 20 assist game for the Celtics in the playoffs.
That's a good find.
That's just what I do. I'm here. But no respect put on my name.
Wow. All
it's
right.
It's actually the first time they've had sub 20 assists since March 13th against Dallas. But that should tell you, okay, while they found things, how did they find them? Were they still hitting the same pressure points? Did they have the same openings? Who was the playmakers? Four assists from Jaylen Brown, four assists from Jason Tatum, .. Continue.
Oh, that's pretty much all I had on Boston's offense. It just, and I was talking to you a little bit about this before the show. Like, I'm trying to find a way to express my disappointment in Boston without discounting what Golden State was able to do. Because I feel like their general ball pressure was good. And very quietly over the last couple of games, like, they've been challenging the handles of Jaylen Brown, challenging the handles of Jason Tatum with the help that they're showing, really getting their hands in there when they do try to attack the basket. On top of them already packing the paint and trying to keep them away from getting all the way to the rim anyway. Ball security has been an issue for Boston in this one. And now they've added that same, I guess just kind of added to that problem when they try to drive to the basket as well. And so I want to commend them on that. But it's also, Boston just has, they just have these possessions where it's like, yo, why'd pull up now? Why are you trying to thread this needle on this pass when Golden State is already rotating to where you want to go with the ball? Like, where's the court sense? Why are we going 50 miles per hour here? Like, the tempo can be better. But that doesn't mean rush into the first thing you see. And now Golden State has a transition opportunity on the other end. And now you're scrambling. Now it's a 10-2 run. Now Ime Udoka is mad at everyone. It feels Bucks adjacent to me with some of the stuff that I saw from Boston offensively. And maybe that's where the frustration is stemming from. I've seen this before. It just feels like a blown opportunity.
I mean, yeah, but that's what the playoffs are.
Yeah.
Someone has to win, someone has to lose. I think you have to give a portion of credit to Golden State for the efforts they made, Wiggins, Draymond, and Klay defensively, to cover a lot of those holes. So we talk about the fourth quarter. If you go back, look at the activity those three displayed. You know what I mean? If you look at that, how much pressure was really put on Jordan Poole? Part of it was Boston maybe not putting him in action as much, but also those guys were scrambling to help.
Yeah.
And contest late in the rim and get in space and recover the kicks. Like, it was, it's one of those times where, yeah, we got to point out that Boston may have left some food on the table, but Boston also took, I mean, Golden State also took some off as well.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things about this series. It's a tough part about a playoff series because you assume as you go from game to game, you watch, you learn, you assume certain things are going to continue to happen. And then you have a game where that thing that you thought was an automatic doesn't happen. And this felt like the Boston's offense is an easy game. Seems crazy to say because Boston's kind of always in the mud a little bit. They felt like they were really searching at points in time. And that changes the math. Like, if Golden State is able to just put the clamps on, it gets interesting.
That it does. As while we're Boston offense adjacent, what do you do? And this is kind of down to picking order. We know the Jays are very important to what Boston wants to do offensively. What do you do to open up shots for Al Horford? Because one of the things you pointed out during the watch party was Golden State getting a little bit more comfortable switching against him. Would you like to see Boston throw him a few token post-ups just to keep him involved? Or is there something like what would you do to kind of scheme that up? Or do you feel like that just isn't a problem for Boston?
I mean, it's not the easiest matchup to scheme it up for him, because most of the lineups, they feel comfortable with Al versus whoever it is. Like, if he's posting up Wiggins, they're fine. If he's posting up Clay, they're fine. Pretty much Steph, really, that's going to generate help. Mm-hmm. But do you want to spam that just for the post-up? You know, how do you sprinkle that in? You got to manipulate his spacing to try and capitalize on Golden State's help, and he's got to be ready to fire. You know, I think he's trying to mix in the driving kicks. That's just what he's done all playoffs. Make shots and also hurt your rotations and create open plays for other people. But it's not the same kind of series, especially if the Warriors are getting better at keeping the ball in front. I mean, slips maybe. I mean, try and get him some minutes if you can against Looney. Pick and pop maybe, but it's more like he's going to have to play out of the flow in this one. More importantly, he's going to have to get off the pressure point list for Golden State. They are attacking this man.
Yeah, that's the big one.
It's no disrespect, but I saw them run a dribble handoff for Andrew Wiggins intentionally with him on him. Klay Thompson, against anytime he switches, back dribbling out.
Not a good place to be if you're Boston.
No, I'm just throwing it out there. But yeah, most of his pick and rolls are now switches right now, which takes a big piece of what he does puzzle-wise. Makes it a little tougher to decipher.
I got you. And on that front, we did see Boston sprinkle in an even smaller lineup towards the end of this one, where they had Robert Williams and Al Horford off the floor. And the first possession, I think, was, what, a Steph drive at a bucket. Once you realize, oh, Grant's the five now.
Yeah. Steph Curry immediately drove to the basket and got a layup. And so to go from two bigs to no bigs, I mean, I got the attempt to try it, try and get some tape on it, see what it does. Maybe you can throw it out there. I just don't know how I feel about it, because it's going to be up to how Golden State feels about Grant Williams. And if you're still getting two on the ball while small, which happened in this game, I'm concerned. Also, can we talk about this real quick?
Sure.
I'm not going to go in and I'm not going to criticize anyone who said the drop coverage thing from Boston all series long. I'm not going to take the opportunity to do that. What I would like to see is like the reasoning as to why they stick with it, maybe spoken about a little bit more. Because if you watch this game tonight, there were times where two were on the ball and things opened wide open for the Warriors. Especially in the fourth, when the Warriors decided, hey, you know what? We're just going to run post splits. You guys have fun with that. We're going to take out all the stuff you guys have been doing all game. We're just going to use this one action to try and exploit it. And boy, did they ever. But yeah, man, you put two on the ball. Guess who that opens up as a roller? Draymond. Not ideal. It's not exactly what you want. No, I'm going to talk about the post. I'm going to talk about the post splits. So I know that was the most disappointed I was in Al Horford this postseason.
He hit a deep drop against
the Kevon Looney is on the perimeter throwing to the post. Of all the people that I would have handed my money over and said, he's going to know, it was Al Horford. And this man was right in the paint. I was disappointed. Now, the next time down, he's on Wiggins. He was right at the level. And Steph Curry hit a bounce pass to Wiggins, and Wiggins scored. They cut them up with the post splits, man. Hey, Marcus Smart, you want to face guard Steph Curry? Cool. He's going to cut back door.
Yep.
All right. And that's where the Warriors, like, it wasn't a perfect offensive game by any version of the means for Golden State, but they were able to find their blend, find their way, and just mix things in, find the post splits, find the dribble penetration. I've loved that they don't spam Steph Curry high pick and rolls, but they just mix them in at the right times. Just right when you think you got a rhythm. Oh, I got to come up to the level. Now they play out of it. So, I don't know. Do better.
And it's wild that they had this kind of success with the post list, because it felt like earlier in the series, they were defending that particular action pretty well, aside from when Robert Williams was in, because he was just going to be in the deep drop. And that just puts all the pressure on Smart or Jaylen Brown or whoever to kind of navigate those screens and stay attached. And they did a solid job, but just the nature of that setup, that's a lot of pressure on those guards to bite over. In this fourth quarter, though, you already hit on it. Golden State dashed them. And if they're able to get that, then they're able to mix in the pick and rolls instead of it being, I don't want to say static, but the game four from Steph. Again, we talked about a little bit on that pod. Most pick and rolls he's ran in the game basically since the 2017, 2018 finals. Like, Golden State doesn't want to do that. And what a luxury it is to be like, all right, well, I guess we have to run a bunch of Steph pick and roll. But they generally don't want to do that. But if they have the off-ball stuff going again, and then they're able to mix in the pick and rolls, and not just the pick and rolls, something that I forgot to mention last podcast, and I want to do it now. Look at how high the screens are being set for Steph at this point. They're darn near at half court sometimes. And so now you have Boston in their drop, but it's Al Horford 2 or 3 feet above the three-point line, which you want him up. But you zoom out, it's still Al Horford versus Steph 30 feet from the basket. That's not a matchup you really want. And if Kevon Looney's setting that screen, then you're one help point if we're talking about, well, not even going to State starting lineup now, since they switched it up without a Porter. But like, if Looney's setting that screen, at best you have one help point. And depending on where that guy is, you might not even have that much help behind that anyway. And so you can't allow Golden State to get to their plan, because, like, overall, their offense hasn't been great throughout the finals. Boston, in general, has done a very good job against Golden State defensively, particularly in the half court. But if Golden State's able to poke and prod you, and now you're starting to see more slip-ups from Boston off ball. Jaylen Brown is someone that I've complimented throughout this series for the work that he's done on both ends. But defensively, and we talked about this on the preview pod, I'm a little bit worried about how Jaylen's going to navigate these off-ball actions. He's a good defender overall. He's really good on the ball. But if there's a weak point for him, it's navigating one, two, maybe three different actions in one possession that can get a little hectic for him. First three games of the series, Jaylen Brown was on it, on top of the tough shots, on top of the drives. Game four, I started to see some cracks with Jaylen Brown. I was like, wait, he's staring at the ball a little bit. He didn't navigate this screen particularly well. He's a step late reacting to this cut. And we get to game five. On first watch, I'm going to watch the game again because that's just what I do. But on first watch, not the best off-ball game for Jaylen Brown defensively. And that just kind of speaks to, one, just the general stamina you need to defend Golden State, because they move all the time. But just the mental toll it takes to try to navigate all that stuff while also trying to navigate what your help principles are, and also calling out switches or taking on a switch that someone else called out and then looking to see where the screen's coming. Like, that's just a lot to deal with. And as this series has gone on, you're starting to see more and more of those cracks. And if Golden State's able to use that to their advantage and now get to the blend that they've struggled to have consistently throughout the series, that's a real problem area for Boston. Because what's kept them in this all the way is that even when we have these lulls offensively, the defense is ironclad. And if that slips while Golden State's defense is getting better and Boston is struggling to generate consistent good looks, at least, I would be concerned. I think Boston should be a little bit concerned.
Well, they are down 3-2.
Yeah,
in the NBA Finals. But I mean, sometimes if we go zoom out a little bit, does it just come down to defense and the others for Boston? Can they find a way to get Derek White going again? Do you use the show and recover to open up Derek White as a roller, as we've seen during this playoff run? Does Peyton Pritchard give you juice off the bench as a screener or in action with his ability to pop and maybe make shots? Can you get something for Grant Williams in this series? Something for him to pop? Because you're going to need them. With the way the attention that Tatum and Brown are going to draw and what they have to carry, Horford and Williams are working, but the Warriors are working to try and take them off the table offensively. You need to be able to kind of be a moving target. You need those guys to step up and show up. So it's going to be can we lock back in defensively? Because, I mean, hey, your Boston coach might look at this box score and be like, hey, if we just take these other guys away, what we're doing is just fine. Now, the problem is this is the playoffs and this is the design. Your game plan is meant to be thrown over the top rope by someone you didn't expect. That's just how it works most times, fortunately. Side note, shout out to Gary Payton.
Yes.
The second. I thought he was incredible in this game. But, I mean, hey, if you're looking at, hey, if we just take Clay away, make it tough on Jordan Poole, we're right back in this thing. Are they wrong? I don't know.
Who's to say?
So I have to listen to the podcast to find out.
That's a good shot. Just a quick half-court note. Four game five, a 79.3 offensive rating in the half-court for Boston, a 93 for Golden State, which, again, not good. But Boston's was what, nearly 14 points worse. Like, that can't happen. But that's all I got. Do you have any lasting thoughts on this game, Five?
No, I'm doing our new final segment where I finally open Twitter and see what people are saying.
Oh, this is going to be good.
So Jaylen Brown said, we dropped the ball execution-wise. That's a quote. Mm-hmm. He said, so there you go, Nikias. You got an ally. What's wrong with Molly Morrison? Oh, no. I can't even repeat that one. Anyways. She Euro-stepped and Andrew Wiggins went to the free throw line after gaining support. Anyways.
I see. Molly will give you a banger, I'll tell you.
Klay Thompson is talking about the ocean. Love Klay Thompson, man. I love Klay Thompson. Aquarius, stand up. Let's go. You going to slander Aquarius? Look, man.
I have nothing to know.
Do your Googles, man.
Do my Googles.
Do you have any lasting shots?
I would just like, I'm just here for a good game six. I would like to see Boston not turn the ball over as much, which 18 for them. And I mentioned the 12 differential. Golden State has 6 turnovers in this one. That is not something we've seen very often throughout this postseason for Golden State. They didn't shoot well overall. Granted, didn't feel like anyone really did. But for them to take care of the ball, that's obviously huge.
Well, the stat is Boston's 1-7 when they turn over 16 or more times this playoff season. 13-2 otherwise. So there's your ally. But yeah, three-point man is sick. His theory did not pay off. That's the weird part, man. Boston, you get the free throw game. You get the Curry game. And you lose by 10.
It's a tough scene. It's a tough scene. Also, that some weird calls in this game.
Oh, not, ISO?
No, ISO. Like, that's not the reason Boston lost. Again, I'm disappointed in the way they lost the plot. Offensively, and the turnovers didn't help. The refs didn't make them do that. But there was some weird stuff, particularly early on. But man, I'm really impressed with Golden State, but also Boston can't lose the plot like they did in this fourth quarter.
I understand. How about Andrew Wiggins, though? How'd you feel about, I didn't get your Andrew Wiggins take on his performance tonight.
This very much feels like a setup, but
I'm asking you spent 20 minutes on this podcast ranting about him not being an all-star. Man has a gigantic performance in the finals. I'm trying to get to see if you've grown perception-wise or anything. Are you talking about an agenda?
Absolutely. But Andrew Wiggins has been very good in this fight. He's been Golden State's second best player throughout this finals, in this finals series.
Okay, I just figured I'd ask. I thought he's been really impressive. Finals MVP?
No.
Who's finals MVP?
I would say that Steph Curry.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendra Perkins, I believe that Steph Curry should win finals MVP regardless of the outcome. He has been the best player in the series, and it's not even close. The man is averaging 35. Don't mind me and carry the hell on.
Wasn't that like a post-game 4 tweet?
I don't know. I'd just be scrolling.
Okay. Well, all right. That seems like a natural logic point. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Please join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have the capability to do so. We're having fun in there. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Subert is a legend.